This is CX of M Radio, the voice of customer experience professionals.
Welcome to another episode of All Things Considered CX. I'm your host, Bob Asman, the founder of Innovative CX Solutions, a past chairperson of the CXPA, and a practitioner with many years of transforming global operations and designing better customer experiences. Together with our guests and listeners, we seek to discuss, challenge, and create new understanding about how to inspire better experiences in response to ever-changing customer expectations.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the All Things Considered CX podcast. My name is Bob Asman, and I'm glad you're joining us again for this episode, an episode that I really enjoy when we talk about things other than customer experience strategy or design. When we talk about the importance of leadership development, and as CX professionals, we all know that how important that is, and also how sometimes we struggle with how we're performing as leaders and where we're going as leaders in this profession. And there's nobody better that I could think of than Marshall Goldsmith to join us on today's podcast to talk about that very subject. And so welcome, Marshall. We're really glad to have you. And if you would just take a moment to introduce yourself. If people don't know who you are, if you could introduce yourself.
My name is Marshall. I'm from a small town called Valley Station, Kentucky. I went to a little engineering school, Rose Holman Institute of Technology, where I almost flunked out. Yet last year I went back and gave the commencement address and got an honorary PhD. I said, look, who knows, right? Got an MBA at Indiana, PhD at UCLA. I was a college professor and dean. And then for 47 years, I did three things. One, I've traveled all around the world speaking and teaching, which I love. I got ranked number one leadership thinker in the world. Two, I coach executives. I've been the coach of the CEO of Ford, Pfizer, Glaxo, World Bank, Walmart, Mayo Clinic, ministers in Saudi Arabia, on and on and on. And I got ranked number one coach in the world. And three, I write books and articles. So I've written four New York Times bestsellers. My biggest selling book is called What Got You Here Won't Get You There, which has been amazing. And so I've sold about 3 million books. So life is good.
Life is good. I have to share with the audience that I first met Marshall when I was at Thomson Reuters and we were in executive program development at Dartmouth College. And he did a session for us. And about the book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There, was very impactful to me. And so I followed Marshall for all those years and was just really glad to have him join us. So Marshall, let's get right into it. As we talk about customer experience professionals, one of the biggest challenges that they have is executive buy-in. So they're leading efforts, they're leading initiatives, they're leading programs that are intended to improve the customer experience, right, both for employees and for their customers of the organization. And right, they struggle to get that buy-in.
Right.
And they're always looking for new ways to do that. A lot of discussion right now in the industry about the ROI of CX and how do I prove that? And I think this goes deeper into leadership components. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first, I'm going to share what I learned from probably the greatest management thinker in history, Peter Drucker. I had the honor of being on his advisory board for 10 years, and he, to me, provided better answers to this question than I can. I mean, I think I'm a smart person. I get ranked number one leadership thinker in the world. My brain compared to him, 10-year-old. He was a very, very smart man. Here's what he taught me. I think it's, if your listeners learn nothing but this lesson, they're going to be better to influence people, have a happier life. Number one, our mission on earth is to make a positive difference, not to prove we're smart, not to prove we're right. Don't get lost on proving you're smart and proving you're right. You're not here to do that. You're here to make a positive difference. Number two, every decision in life is made by the person who has the power to make the decision. Make peace with that. Not the smartest person, a fair person, a right person, a good person. Decisions are made based on one and only one variable, power. Whoever has the power to make the decision is going to make the decision. Learning point three, if I need to influence you and you have the power to make the decision, there's one and only one word to describe you. That word is called customer. There's one word to describe me. That word is called salesperson. Customers never have to buy. salespeople have to sell. Customers don't have to buy. Salespeople have to sell. And what happens is, especially if people with technical background get lost in being right, but it's good, but I'm right. Well, nobody cares. You have to be in sales. Sell what you can sell. If you can sell it, sell it. If you can change it, change it. If you cannot sell it and cannot change it, take a deep breath, let it go, and move on to something else. And ultimately, if you're completely frustrated in the organization, look for another job. The reality is, though, they don't have to buy. You have to sell. I've had to repeat this lesson 1,000 times in my job as a coach. That's point one. Great lesson. By the way, that applies in life. That applies throughout life. Number two, it's a hard sell. Why is it a hard sell? It is incredibly difficult to get anyone to do anything that is not in their short-term KPIs. Any long-term interest, by the way, is hard. Psychologically, we think of the future versions of ourselves as another person, much less the future versions of the organization. Now, let me give you an example. Let's assume I'm in a bank. I'm a 62-year-old manager. I'm going to retire in 3 years. Well, I look at this as a long-term investment, which is good for the customer experience. That's nice. I got a quota now. I have a family now. I've got numbers I got to make now. I got a boss pounding me over the head now. And all this long-term good for the bank stuff is nice, but, you know, I'm not even going to be in this bank. It's a hard sell. It's a hard sell. Anytime you sell something, it is not in the short-term best interest of the person you're selling to. It's tough. And in theory, everyone should take a hit for the long-term good of the organization. In practice, that is an incredibly difficult sale. Let me give you an extreme example. One of my clients, back to banking, CEO of a bank. He has the top 12 people in the bank. All right, I want to spend 4 hours and do nothing but focus on long-term future of the bank and strategy. Only 4 hours. The top 12 people. Not an unrealistic request, right? Mm-hmm. End of the week, how many people did it? Zero. Why? They all got busy. All got busy doing something. And I told him, again, imagine I'm a 62-year-old guy. 4 years from today, I'm not even in this bank. Mm-hmm. By the way, the bank is owned by a bunch of rich people. I'm taking a hit for myself and my family today, so some old rich people are going to be richer 4 years from today. It's a hard sell. It's a hard sell. It's a hard sell.
And you know, Marshall, I don't think that example is too extreme. I think the people in our profession see that and encounter that more than not.
It's a hard sell.
It's a hard sell. So Marshall, somebody says, oh my gosh, I'm not a salesperson. I can hear them saying it now as they're listening to this podcast. I'm not a salesperson, right? But we have to be, is what you're saying.
Look, imagine you're that person. And I'm going to coach you. Ready? We're going to do a little coaching session. Imagine you're the person. You be that stereotypical person, and I'll be your coach. Ready? You start with it. You talk.
Marshall, I know what you're saying, but I'm not a salesperson. I can't sell this.
Breathe. Stop. Stop. Breathe. Breathing. Quit saying I'm not a salesperson. The first thing is, if you're ever going to get good at something, quit saying I'm no good at that. You're just programming yourself. Do you have an incurable genetic defect that is prohibiting you from being a good salesperson?
I don't think so.
Then raise your right hand and repeat after me. I do not have an incurable genetic defect.
I do not have an incurable genetic defect.
Therefore, I can change.
Therefore, I can change.
I need to become a good salesperson.
I need to become a good salesperson.
I'm going to grow up and face that fact and get to work and learn how to sell.
I'm going to grow up and face that fact and learn how to sell. I love it. That's and you know what? I hear the other thing I hear is it's a hard sell. And
it's a hard sell.
I mean, that is so affirmative that yes, it is a hard sell, but that's not a reason not to sell it.
It's your job.
Right.
By the way, ask any salesperson, how easy their job is. Yeah, I've had a guaranteed myself, my job, I've had a guaranteed base salary of zero for the last 47 years. So I think I understand about selling.
Yeah, I would think you would be an expert at that.
Yeah, I know what that feels like. It's a hard sell. And it's always a hard sell. Look, let me help people have a deeper understanding of what's going on.
Okay.
There are two corporate realities. One reality is what I call the stated reality. The second reality is I'd call the deeper or personal reality. They're seldom the same. Look, everyone pretends their entire motivation in life is the long-term best interest of the corporation. I mean, that's nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
They're human beings. They have families. They got to make a living, right? And by the way, most corporations don't care about them. They're not idiots. Yeah. Back to the salespeople you're trying to influence. They don't make their numbers. They can get fired.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, why am I sacrificing myself for the long-term best interest of a corporation that will fire me? I'm not. I pretend to. I'm happy to pretend to. But I'm not really. I mean, come on, man. Grow up. Get a life.
Oh, man. So true. So everything you're saying, I could just relate to 100%.
Yeah, it's life. And I got a tough sell.
Right.
I got a tough sell. And sell what you can sell. By the way, the other thing is, look, you're not going to win them all. What is a key to a great salesperson? They know how to deal with rejection.
Mm-hmm.
Who gets rejected more, good salespeople or bad salespeople? Good salespeople. They try more.
Right. They're out there.
Mm-hmm. They try. Look, mm-hmm. Get used to rejection. It's part of life. Yeah. Yeah. I told her I loved her. She said, maybe one day we can be best friends. I live in Nashville. What's country music all about?
Right? Well, that's the old adage. When you play a country music song backwards, you get your wife back, you get your dog back, you get your pickup truck back, right? That's the old adage, but it's so true. So let's tag out of that, Marshall. So the other thing that's plaguing this profession, and I use that word deliberately, plaguing, is maybe they're not selling, but they just can't make any headway. They can't get the buy-in that we talked about. They're not maybe selling right. So there's high turnover in the profession. A lot of times we've seen studies that they only last 18 to 24 months. So, and some just go off into a completely different profession. They give up.
Right.
They might not have a home in an organization. So how do they develop that career base if they've said, hey, I can't get this done in this organization?
Look, I'm one of the great, I'm a coach, right?
Right.
And the first thing I want to tell you is you got to work with people that care. I mean, if they don't care, take a deep breath and move on.
Right.
I mean, I'm often asked me, how do I coach people that don't care? And the answer is, I don't. Did you ever try to change a wife or partner didn't want to change? How'd that work out for you?
Not very well.
How about trying to change mommy and daddy that don't want to change? How's that work out? No, that's not a good plan. They don't care. You're not going to help anything. Take a deep move. Get another job. It's okay. Leave. Right. If they don't care, don't waste your time. Here's the way you can influence executives as best you can. You need to get one message. Mr. or Ms. CEO, you tell me what you want the customer experience to be like and drive everything around that. You can present them data till hell freezes over, right? At the end of the day, if the big people don't want to do it, it's not going to happen. And you try to run it down their throat, you are wasting your time. They got to sign up. So let's say I'm coaching a future CEO. I'd say to the CEO, if this person gets better at these behaviors over this time period, it's judged by these people, is worth this money, yes or no? The guy says, yes. I said, good. You hire me, you can't lose. Gets better, pay me. Don't get better, it's free. Coach, number one coach in the world. Just try. That's it. That's the whole equation. Pretty simple stuff, right? Not complex. You tell me it's worthwhile, Mr. CEO. Well, get the executive to tell you what they want. You don't tell them. They tell you. You present them information. You make the presentation. You give them ideas. It's not your company. You're not the CEO of the company. They're the CEO of the company. You know what they're going to do? They're going to do whatever they want to do. The decision maker is going to make the decision. Now, the same thing is true for the CEO. Sometimes they forget who they are. I have to talk to them with two words. You know what I tell them? Owner wins. Owner wins. Not owner is right. Owner is logical. Owner is good. Owner wins. This is the way it works in the real world, right? Mm-hmm. Owner wins. Well, decision maker wins. That's it. You don't win. You're not the CEO of the company. Nobody made you the boss. They're the CEO. Right. They don't work for you. You work for them. You got to sell them. Now, get them to tell you what they want. If the CEO believes you are busting your butt to help them achieve their goals, they like you. And if they don't, you're a pain in the butt. Does that make sense?
It does. And that, to me, I've been in this profession a number of years. To me, that's a paradigm shift, because we are known for gathering all this customer information and put the customer first, and then we present it and we say, here's the strategy. And I bet I could count on one hand the number of times that the CEO was asked, tell me what you want the customer experience to be.
Right.
And that's phenomenal.
That's the question. By the way, if they don't buy it, it's not going to happen.
Right. Well, now what you're saying is it's theirs. They just owned it by saying, I want the customer experience to be like this. They just took ownership of it, right?
People ask me, how do I prove to my clients my coaching is worthwhile? I don't prove it to them. They prove it to me. They tell me this is what they want. You don't want it? Fine. Don't. I don't care. Look.
That we hear that all the time and say, prove to me that CX is being effective. I mean, repeatedly.
Yeah. You know what? You tell me what you want, Mr. CEO. I will then work hard to deliver on that. Then you can tell me, did I do an effective job of delivering what you asked me to deliver?
Yes. That is so important, and such a shift from what we're trying to do, you know, with numbers and, you know, proving our worth as experienced professionals, right?
There's a phrase I use called lost in logic. Lost in logic. Decisions are not made based on logic. Decisions are made based on power. Whoever has the power to make the decision will make the decision. That's it. Now, if it's logical, it's logical. If it's illogical, it's illogical. The decision maker is going to make the decision, not you. You're not the CEO of the company. They do not have to buy, and you do have to sell. Look, this is true at all levels. One of my clients, he's a great guy, but you know, we get lost. CEOs get lost on this all the time. You can't believe CEOs have the same discussion. You think it stops at CX? CEOs say the same thing. The board doesn't understand. So one of my CEO clients, right? He goes to the board with a CFO. 10 out of 10 vote, we don't like this guy. 10 out of 10. Well, he tells them they're all confused, and he's trying to schedule one-on-one phone calls to point out why they're confused. Oh, they immediately left after he left the room and called me. I had to go talk to him. I said, you know, Mr. Client, you just told those 10 people they were confused. He said, yes, that's very bad. They were confused. I said, you know, they had a meeting after you left. You know what they wanted me to point out to you? You're confused. You're incredibly confused. You see, you're confused because you thought they reported to you. Oh, but they want me to point out, you indeed report to them. You indeed report to them. They don't report to you. And 10 out of 10, or they're very smart people, told you this was a stupid idea. Now, you are indeed going to call them. You're going to call them one at a time, just like you say, you know what you're going to do? You're going to apologize for being so arrogant. Say, please accept my apologies, and I'm going to look for another candidate. I'm sorry I wasted your time. You know what he said? Yes, sir. And he did.
Well, good for him for that. I mean, you know.
I was right. I knew I was right.
Yeah, right.
Grow up. Get over yourself. You're not God.
I love it. Absolutely love it. Couple other things to get your input on, Marshall. The next one is, so if we step this up a little bit and take a broader look at leadership, you know, your perspective on where are we headed, what are leaders looking for, what's happening there in the world of leadership?
The leader of the future will differ from the leader of the past in several significant ways. As I've outlined in my book, Global Leadership, The Next Generation, the evolution of leadership reflects the changing context of our world. Here are the five key differences. One, global perspective. Future leaders will need to think globally, understanding the interconnectedness of markets, economies, and political landscapes. They will have to navigate international considerations and be adept at working across borders. Two, cultural diversity. Appreciating and leveraging cultural diversity will be crucial. Leaders will need to motivate and manage teams that are increasingly diverse in terms of culture, language, and customs, turning this diversity into a competitive advantage. Three, technological savvy. As technology continues to advance, leaders must be technologically literate. They will need to understand how to harness technology to improve efficiency, innovation, and connectivity within their organizations. Four, building partnerships and alliances. The ability to create and maintain strategic partnerships and alliances will be essential. Leaders will have to collaborate effectively with a range of stakeholders, both within their organizations and with external partners, to achieve shared objectives. Five, shared leadership. The command and control style of leadership is giving way to a more collaborative approach. Future leaders will share leadership, empowering others, and working together to achieve common goals. They will ask more than they tell, following the guidance of thinkers like Peter Drucker. These changes reflect a shift from the traditional hierarchical leadership models of the past to a more collaborative, flexible, and adaptive approach that is necessary to thrive in a rapidly changing global environment.
And by the way, who said that? My computer bot. I asked my computer bot, how will the leader of the future differ from the leader of the past? That's the answer.
That is the answer, and it's a very good answer. Okay, now you have to ask about then the Marshall Goldsmith AI, though, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm working on this project. I've always wanted to give away everything I know. I've never been able to do it. I've been trying to do this 20 years, come up with some technology solution. I mean, we're talking 20 years of failure here. Just recently, this thing has gone through the roof. So what's happened is a variety of things have come together. So right now, I put everything I know into my own computer bot. And it's mind-blowing. Let me give you the history of it. Again, I started out with all kinds of experiments, interactive video, all kinds of stuff, clunky, expensive, failure. What happened is I'm very fortunate. I work with an AI company. And we are developing MarshallBot, my own Marshall Goldsmith. You can go there right now. Just go to Marshall Goldsmith, my name, Marshall has two L's, dot AI. Mm-hmm. You can ask him any question. I just did.
Right.
That was the answer.
Exactly.
It sounds like me talking because it is me. That's me. So what happens is I'm very fortunate. Four qualities enable me to do this. One is I've got a ton of content. I mean, I've done 55 books. If you don't have a lot of content, these things don't work.
Don't work. Mm-hmm.
Two, I got a lot of followers. I have 1.5 million followers just on LinkedIn. Well, if you don't have followers, it doesn't work. Why? You're giving away everything you know and no one cares. Three is I'm willing to give it away. I'm 75. I'm giving everything. What am I saving it up for, right? I'm 75 years old. Give it all away. I don't care. It's all free. So it's all free. And then four, I'm even better. I get somebody to pay for it. It's a very generous company, Fractal Analytics. I'm the coach of their CEO and the founders. Basically, out of, you know, they're Indian. I'm a guru out of respect. Give back. Mm-hmm. This is give back. It's all free.
Well, and I've tried it, and it is amazing. And literally ask it anything, and it will come back with a, what I would call a very practical answer. But of course, it's Marshall Goldsmith, so you would expect it to be a practical answer. But it's really useful information.
Well, let me. You made a very important point. Every AI bot is biased. Let me tell you what I mean by that. You ask it, what is leadership? It gives you an answer. But there are 30 possible answers. Why that answer? They're all biased. If you know what happened with Google's AI bot, Gemini just blew up, right, because of political bias. Well, this is biased by me. Now, I'm not saying these are the best answers. They're my answers. Mm-hmm. But at least you know whose answer it is. It's not some conglomerate. The other thing I teach is called feed forward. Ask for ideas, listen, and say thank you. If you want to do it, do it. If you don't want to do it, ignore it. All right. Mm-hmm. Ask it a question. It'll give you a bunch of suggestions. All right. Let's say it gives you 7 suggestions. Let's say you only like 2 of them. Fine. Do the 2. Ignore mm-hmm. the 5. By the way, it costs nothing anyway. It's free.
Right. In fact, Marshall, that's one of the questions I asked was, explain to me what feed forward is.
Yeah.
And so I have firsthand experience because I saw it in some of the literature and so forth. And so I thought, I think I know what it is, but I want to hear directly from Marshall exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And so I put that into the bot and it, like you said, it feeds you information and gives you options and pick and choose. Right. But it's really good.
I'll tell you, you can also ask it esoteric questions. For example, my daughter wanted to trick it. She said, all right, how is utilitarian philosophy related to your coaching? Mm. It gave a perfect answer in 5 seconds.
Really?
It studied utilitarian philosophy, which I know nothing about, by the way. It studied my coaching. It answered through the filter of my coaching in my voice in 5 seconds.
In 5 seconds.
It's mind-blowing. Now, could I have answered that question maybe in a couple days? Maybe. Or not. But could I answer that question 1,000 times around the world at once? I don't think so.
No.
Now, let me tell you what's coming. Version 1, text. Version 2, audio. You just heard the audio. Did that sound like me?
Yep, exactly.
My voice. Mm-hmm. Version 3 is going to be video. You're going to see a video of some old bald guy with a green t-shirt and a beard talking to you.
Oh.
The whole thing's going to be video. So you won't know this Zoom call is me or it. Number 4, multiple languages. Mm. You're going to be able to see what looks like me on a video with my voice and mouth moving in a way that is consistent with multiple languages. Ask it about any question related to my field. It will give you an answer in 5 seconds, 1,000 times around the world in different languages.
Amazing.
Welcome to the new world.
Exactly.
Now, I'm proud of this. You know why? I'm 75. Let's be honest. On the cool scale for age 75, this is off the charts. This is off the charts. I like it. Some young guy comes to me. Do you know anything about AI? I go, Well, I don't know much, but let's ask my friend.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, let's ask my little buddy.
Yeah, let's ask my buddy.
Yeah, I don't know much, but my friend can help you.
And by the way, listeners, just to clarify, this is the real Marshall Goldsmith. This is not Marshall Goldsmith the bot, just so people are wondering. But it could be one day. Is what you're saying is literally we could be looking, you could be talking to us about coaching concepts, just like you are sitting there right now. And it'd be the bot. Ask a question. And there comes Marshall with his audio and video answering the question.
That's it. It's only going to get better and better and better and faster and faster and faster. It is mind-blowing how good these things are. And they're only going to get better. Now, here's a key for coaches, because coaches are very threatened by this stuff. Well, the reality is I cannot compete with this thing for knowledge dissemination. See, this isn't really a coaching bot. This is a knowledge dissemination bot.
Mm.
When it comes to information and knowledge, I can't compete with this. My friend is Dr. Patrick Frias. He's the CEO of Rady Children's Hospital. They're merging with another children's hospital. They're going to be co-CEOs. Well, what's good about being co-CEO? What are the biggest challenges? What suggestions do you have? That's a tough question. There aren't that many co-CEOs in the world. I asked my friend. Boom. Brilliant answer. He said, but I'd like to know more about that one part of the answer, boundaries. Boom. Another brilliant answer. I called my friend Al Mulally, probably the greatest leader in America in the last 30 years, the CEO of Ford, who turned the company around.
Mm-hmm.
He said, tell me about Al Mulally's working together process. Boom, perfect answer. I mean, he's an engineer. If one word was wrong, you tell me. Mm-hmm. This thing is mind-blowing.
It is.
And, you know, it's free. And here's the key. It's only going to get better. Now, what I tell coaches is the problem with what I teach isn't theory, it's execution. It's not understanding ideas, it's getting people to do the ideas. Well, you know, you can't compete with this thing on knowledge. If you think look, no offense to the rest of the world, that guy ranked number one leadership thinker and coach in the world multiple times. This thing's way smarter than me. I got some advice for you. Don't get into a contest, you'll lose. You're going to lose. You're not smarter than this. I'm not smarter than this. This thing is 1,000 times as smart as me.
But this is you, though, Marshall.
Yes.
This is your content.
Wait. But yes, okay. And no. Here's what happened. My original goal was it would answer every question as well as I could. That was my original goal. Bye-bye. That goal is long gone.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
That is long gone. It can not only answer that question, it can answer many more questions from my perspective. That's what's mind-blowing. My daughter said about utilitarian philosophy. I don't know what utilitarian philosophy even is. I don't have a clue. It studies it. It studies what I do. It says, how would Marshall Goldsmith feel about utilitarian philosophy? Here's the scary part. It's right.
Let me understand this. You know nothing about utilitarian philosophy.
Zero.
You ask it the question, it answers, and you say it's right about what you're viewing. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's mind-boggling.
If you're online, you can ask it, how is Buddhist philosophy related to Marshall? No. How is Buddhist philosophy related to your coaching? Because it refers to me. If you say you, that's referring to me. Right. How is Buddhist philosophy? I understand Buddhist philosophy. Boom, 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 boom. Brilliant answer. Then you can say, well, how about the Buddhist concept of impermanence? How's that related? Brilliant answer. Mm-hmm. It's mind-blowing.
Mind-blowing. Definitely.
All right. Yeah, it is amazing. Okay, you ready?
Yes.
Well, let's have some fun.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you a question. We're going to ask you a little more fun question. And I'm trying to also make it more human. And I think a computer bot, it's hard for it to be a human.
Right.
Now, this is a question I get all the time. And it's a seemingly trivial question. I always wear a green polo shirt. An interesting question. Why do we always wear a green polo shirt? Well, it's thinking right now, but ready?
Uh-huh.
And it just writes this brilliant answer about why I always wear a green polo shirt. Yeah, it's amazing. You know, it goes on. Ready?
Ready.
The New Yorker magazine years ago wrote the story of my life. It was a wonderful profile authored by Larissa McFarquhar. In the profile, Larissa noted that I always wore a green polo shirt. I didn't actually always wear a green polo shirt, but that's what she remembered. Once it was published, people started expecting me to wear a green polo shirt. This was great for me because I don't like to dress up anyway. So now I wear a green polo shirt almost every day. It's become a part of my personal brand and simplifies my life, allowing me to focus on more important decisions.
Unbelievable.
That is fun.
It is fun. It's amazing fun. There's all kinds of words to describe it, right?
Oh, yeah, this thing is fun. And look, I'm not naive. I know 25 years ago, I wrote an article in a book called Community of the Future. I said, 25 years, it's going to be something like instant TV quality download, audio visual transmission over something like the internet. So when that happens, media addiction will surpass drug addiction and alcohol addiction combined as a social problem. Oh, we're already there. Media addiction is a disaster in our society. Look, I know what can go wrong with these things. Mm-hmm. Here's my attitude. Do something good. I mean, I could be an old man.
I don't like that newfangled technology there. You know, that's no good. I'd rather talk to a person.
Well, that's nice, but, you know, this is a new world. Option A, try to do something good, or option B, sit back and complain.
I like option A.
I do, too. Just try to do something good.
Right.
You know, I mean, I'm trying to do something good here, you know. Better than sit back. This is going to happen anyway, by the way. Some people thought, I'm not sure I support this. I'm talking to some executive coach. I'm not sure I should support this technology. Yeah, grow up. This train has left the station.
Oh, by far. Yes.
This train, by the way, there's not millions of dollars in this game. There are trillions of dollars in this game. Absolutely. Oh, that train's left the station. And whether you, Mr. or Ms. Executive Coach, want this to happen or not is a 100% irrelevant issue.
Mm-hmm.
That train is gone. Do something good. Do something. It's going to happen anyway.
Right to your original point, Marshall. Do something good. So true. Marshall, this has been fantastic. Just a couple of quick things. One, you are hosting a program for high potentials. Do you want to share that?
Yeah. Let me talk about that. It's a little bit of a rambling story, but I came up with this idea of giving away things to 15 high potential young people. So I said, I'm going to give away everything, you know, to 15 young people. And the only price is they get old, they do the same thing for others. Pay it forward. That's a nice idea, right? So I make a little video and put it on LinkedIn. Well, I'm thinking 100 people will apply, and I'll adopt 15. And I was wrong. 18,000 people applied. Oh, my God. But it wasn't just who applied. It wasn't just how many. It was who they were. Like, you know, oh, I'm the president of World Bank. I want to be in your group, or I'm the CEO of Ford. I want to be in your I can't say no to these people, right? I'm the top strategy thinker in the world. I want to be in your group. What am I supposed to say? No. So now we have 400 people, but the problem is they're all very distinguished people. Now I'm going back to my original goal. On August 16, 17, 18, I'm doing a two-day training program. You're only going to be billed expenses. What, you know, the AV and food and all that. My time is free. The site is free. It's in Nashville. And I'm going to teach basically 2 days, my basic leadership for 2 days for free. See, wow. And by the way, but this time I'm setting ages 25 to 35 years old. No CEOs and no billionaires, please. I got plenty of billionaires. I don't want any more billionaires. I don't want any more CEOs. I tell everybody, I go, no. You can't. Well, how about my replacement? No. I don't want your replacement. I don't want you. This is 25 to 30 years old. That's it.
Wow.
So if anybody's 25 or 35, send me an email and say, you know, send me your bio and email. Here's why I'd like to come to your program and learn everything you know.
That's great. That's fantastic. And this is a
no CEOs or billionaires, please. I'm sick of them. None of them.
But and it was August 16, 17?
And 18. In Nashville. We also have parties, music, fun, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, Nashville's fun.
Well, and that's a great age group for many of the professionals in customer experience as well, the up and coming high potential. In fact, when I was in work as a chair of the board of the Customer Experience Professional Associations, I worked hard at creating a high potential program because I want to get the new generation coming up. So this is a great, idea. So, Marshall, this has been fantastic. Any final words of wisdom before I close out this fantastic session?
Take a deep breath. Imagine that you're 95 years old. You're just getting ready to die. But you're given a beautiful gift, the ability to go back in time and talk to the person listening to me right now. What advice that wise old person who knows what mattered and what didn't have for the youth listening to me? Whatever you're thinking now, do that. Some friends of mine interviewed old people. Three themes. Number one, life is short. Be happy now. I'm 75. The years go just like that. Number two, take care of people, family, friends, the people you're around. Main reason to be good to people has nothing to do with money or status. It's the 95-year-old you will be proud of you because you did. Disappointed if you don't. If you got a dream, go for it, because you don't go for it when you're 40. You may not when you're 80. And it doesn't have to be big, maybe little. Start a podcast. do a computer bot. Whatever. Yeah. Old people, we don't regret the risks we take and fail. We regret the risks we fail to take. So finally, look, my mission in life is very simple. If a couple people have just a little better life based on this talk, good talk for me. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you, Marshall. Really enjoyed it. This has been another episode of the All Things Considered CX podcast. I really appreciate Marshall's time, as busy as this individual is. Some great insight and perspectives. And listeners, check him out, marshallgoldsmith.ai, or certainly follow him on LinkedIn. He's a wealth of information. And as he said to us repeatedly, it's all free. So until next time, listeners, take care.
Thanks for listening to this episode of All Things Considered CX. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your colleagues. Subscribe to our show, follow me on LinkedIn, and visit my website at innovativecx.com for more insights on creating better experiences.
Thanks for joining us for this session of CX of M Radio. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show, and visit cxofm.org for more resources.